This is A View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants, kingdomofthegiants.com. My name is Dylan Newlever-Cahy. On this week's show, we'll be looking back at wins against the Dundee Stars and the Manchester Storm, and look forward to the games against the Fife Flyers and the Coventry Blaze in the Sky Dome and in the SSC Arena. If you want to get in touch, you can email us, podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. Hit us up on Facebook and give us a follow on Twitter @AVFTB. Hit the music.
Big thank you to Dylan for that introduction. My job's really on the line here when a fella like that is doing such a good job. Good to hear he's doing so well. Yes, welcome to this week's A View from the Bridge podcast. An interesting weekend for the Belfast Giants. A four-point weekend for the Belfast Giants and their first road win of the season. But maybe it isn't as straightforward as it sounds, and no doubt something we'll be covering as this show goes on. We'll also hear from Adam Keefe, Danny Stewart and Aaron Murphy. First up, I want to say hello to Mr. Majimsy. How are you?
I'm not bad, Paddy.
You keeping well?
Not too bad. I just see breaking on the news there that you're gonna have a very difficult day to manage in December, how you're going to vote in Manchester and get back to Belfast to vote there as well.
Mate, I also have a house up in Newcastle. How am I going to deal with that? You know what I mean? It's a busy day. It's a busy day.
It's going to be a busy day.
Mr. Kitchen, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Everything's good in Belfast. Weather's been great the last couple of days. A bit cold, but all good, yes.
And a good round of golf this morning.
Did okay, actually. I was quite pleased the way I played. Was out with one of the Giants fans, Lee Carson. He's a former cab driver, and my brother Mo. So up in the sheds. He's trying to continue to lower his handicap, but he's out with the out hands today, as he calls it. But
Handicap? I thought it must be down near scratch by now.
I think he's off about 6 or 7 at the moment. If you get out every day, you're going to get better. So if he's probably going to be on the seniors tour at some point. I didn't say anytime soon, you know. I wouldn't be surprised. You know, he's a competitive guy, but good to see him.
Right, before we get stuck into the week's games or the weekend's games, I just want to throw up another reminder of our Bleed Tail 100 drive. Davey, we've had a good few people tweeting in, but this has to continue. We need people to keep coming forward and keep donating that blood.
Absolutely, Paddy, and as the winter nights draw in and people maybe start getting a wee bit comfortable and don't want to get out there, you know, let's get it done nice and early. Get yourself onto the Northern Ireland Blood Transfusion website. Get a date booked in, or see where in your local area they tend to do church halls and that kind of thing. And, you know, they're out in the community as well. So you don't always have to go into the city centre to get it done. But if you can donate, please do. Get yourself on our list. We'll get you a pint. Our friends at Phone a Cab will donate £10. Our friends at the Odyssey will donate a pint in your name. And the Northern Ireland Blood Transfusion get to save 3 lives. So with your blood. So please, please, if you can, join in.
Yeah, absolutely. At this time of year, I know that the Blood Transfusion Service, both back in Northern Ireland and over here where I live in GB, you know, it's always really short when it comes to the darker nights, because not as many people tend to come forward. But we would really implore you and would thank you if you were able to go down and give as much blood as you can. But within reason, sis.
Yeah, no, you can't give it all. I had a call last week actually from the Northern Ireland Blood Transfusion Service at the City Hospital. I've been giving blood for a while now, and now I'm going to try to start giving platelets. So in 2 weeks' time, I'll get my first appointment for the platelets, which is I'm looking forward to. It's a wee bit more complex and a little bit more time required on it, but certainly for a very, very good cause.
And when you get down there, be sure to tweet us and #BleedTail100, and we'll add your name to the list. And like I say, £10 goes from courtesy of Phone a Cab to the Blood Transfusion Service Northern Ireland, and you'll be able to claim your own drink towards the end of the season. Right,
Let's look at this weekend's games. The Belfast Giants had a home game against Dundee and away game against the Manchester Storm. Let's start with that game against Omar Pasha's Dundee Stars side. A 7-2 win for the Belfast Giants. The goals coming from Vronka Smotherman, Morgan on the power play, Pelic, Hook and Dupuis on the power play. Forsberg getting that seventh goal. For the Dundee Stars, Marquardt and Elgin Pearce, who no doubt we'll be talking about in a short while. Saves, Leclerc 35 saves, 7 against, and Owen 19 saves, 2 against. Your referees were Andrew Dalton and Chris Wells. Davey, I'll start with you. 7 goals, 7 scorers. Well, we've been talking about how the Giants had to find the back of the net, and they certainly did that.
Certainly good to get goals from all different lines and different players. And of course, Patrick Vronka, as we talked about last week and in previous weeks, doing a lot of great stuff, doing a lot of great transition, a lot of setup plays, but maybe just lacking a goal. And just as Andrew Dixon took the microphone, Hooky comes down, strips it back down the wing and pops a lovely pass into centre ice and a little forehand backhand through the wickets of Leclerc and put the Giants one up. And that sort of, there was a bit of a sigh of relief around the arena almost, that you could feel the atmosphere lifting, you know. And obviously they pegged us back fairly soon after that. But, you know, we went on then. Smo comes up with a lovely finish himself and we go on. Liam Morgan, bit of a fox in a box, scrambling around the puck line in the blue paint after a bit of a scramble, and sends us into the first period, break 3-1 up.
Yes, sorry, I didn't realise you were stopped there. Says I'll turn to you. The Giants showed a bit of an expansive game. They showed the fact that they were able to use the ice and play a much wider game and really put pressure on Omar Pasha's side.
Yeah, I thought we played very, very well. And, you know, we always have tend over, especially the last couple of years, we've always had a difficult game against Omar Pasha's side, whether it be in Hull, Manchester or Dundee. And he does always seem to get his players up for it. And they played very well for the first potentially 21 minutes. After that, we just lifted our game and you know, did very, very well. I thought we were outstanding, to be honest. We did, you know, we turned over the puck a little bit too easily in the first period. There was definitely plays that you know, we don't normally make. And when they got their goal, 33 seconds or 32 seconds into the second period to tie it up again, I'm sitting thinking, oh girl, here we go again.
Yeah.
You know, we're literally, you know, we give that was too easy. That was just too easy. And it was like a carbon copy of their first goal, apart from the finish. I mean, the first goal they got, the finish, which Chris Wells didn't see.
I can't believe he didn't see that.
You know, 15 feet away from it. I'm sitting at the opposite end of the rink, high up in the stand, and I called it straight away. Dicko wanted to do a try to play-by-play, which I thought he was really good at, and I'm hoping to get a couple of nights off if he can jump in there at some point. Mm. But, you know, for him not to see that and the play to continue for nearly a minute, and then obviously go back and make the right decision. That was a fantastic finish by Marquardt.
Yeah.
But then, as I say, if you watch the play, it was a little behind the back pass from Beauregard, Marquardt finished it very, very well. The second goal, more or less the same thing, a little back pass out from the boards. One rebound, Owen saved the first one. He couldn't get the second chance to save the rebound effort, and Pearce put it away. But after that, I thought we were really good. I thought we controlled the game. I know that Pash was not happy with his troops after that game. I spoke to him, and probably the angriest I've seen him since we've got to know the guy in the last couple of years. And he just he came into the interview room and said, "Look, you know, let's get this over and done with." And once he actually did the interview once, and then said, "Look, can I do that again?" I says, "Absolutely." So it did. Another interview and let him pick which one he wanted to put out. So he was very disappointed with a lot of his guys. And you know, it's as all coaches do. You know, not everybody plays well on any given night. You know, you always have a bad game. And for us, I thought we dominated on Saturday night. And it was good to see a couple of guys. Davey's already mentioned Vronka got off. You know, got a goal. Jesse Forsberg got a goal. Lewis Hook got a goal. So, you know, it's good to see guys who don't normally get or haven't been getting the opportunity to put the puck in the net to finally get that off their back. And hopefully they can push on and have a really good season each as well.
You were on, as it said on the commentary as well, that you'd been chatting to Patrick Ronka and you were sure he really wanted that goal. He really wanted to get that, break that duck.
Yeah, I was speaking to him on Thursday morning after practice. He stayed on the ice for probably an hour, 5 or 10 minutes after everybody else left. Funny enough, so did Hookie. And he's just, you know, practicing shot from different angles. And he said, I said to him, I said, how you getting on? He said, I get plenty of shots. I get plenty of shots. And I said to him, I said, look, as long as you're getting the shots, that's the most important thing. But you're going to score on Saturday night or Friday night. Don't be panicking. You'll get a goal. As soon as I walked down to do the interviews on Friday night, he came out. He was coming out to do meet a couple of the fans. And he seen me. He says, Kitchy, I get the goal. So I've done it for Tubes 2 weeks ago. I did it for Patrick Vronka this week. So I'm going to try and pick somebody else to go this weekend as well.
Start picking out the players and just letting them know. What were your thoughts on the fact that we had 7 scorers across that? Because obviously we spoke in previous weeks about the problems we've had in finding the back of the net, but to spread the scoring right across 7 different scorers was great for the Giants.
I really couldn't care less if one person scored 7 goals.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean? It's important to get the win, and as it, you know, this is a team sport, and it's all about, you know, it's all nice for guys to get points and stuff, but you know, you look at, and we'll go on to talk about Sunday, obviously, and Curtis Hamilton, he hasn't scored for probably, I think it's probably 5 or 6 games he hasn't scored for. Davey will have a better idea there, but again, it's certainly good for confidence. As an individual, Patrick, as I say, he doesn't stay out after every practice. But he's obviously concerned because he's not getting on the score sheet. Hookie, in fairness to him, does. You know, Hookie's usually one of the last guys off the ice, as is Jesse Forsberg and Curtis Leonard. And they're always trying to work on their game. So, like, a lot of people think they get it easy and they train for an hour and a half a day, they go to the gym and then they go home. It's certainly not hard putting your day in because, you know, you need to get your rest, especially with games coming thick and fast. And it was good to get a 4-point weekend and start off with that win on Friday night against Dundee. Paddy, when you're obviously you don't get to watch the games live at the arena very often with living in Manchester, but what did you make of the incident with Pierce and Pelich when Pelich went over and took Lewis Hook's spot and then the headbutt?
It was a headbutt.
100%.
I think there's a level of consistency that has to happen here within officiating. That it was the officials are watching that because obviously they've seen Pelich step in there to go side by side on Elgin Pierce, who, let's be fair, all game long was a bit of a pest to the Giants, and I have no issue with that. I love players like that. We've had plenty of players like that for the Belfast Giants. And, you know, it subsequently led to the fight with Dupuis. But in that incident itself, you look at, obviously, Matt Pelich is there to try to intimidate. And he's seen Pierce go at it and trying to act a big man. He thought, well, actually, okay, then if you want to act a big man, here I am. And he's got in his face. Now, it's up to Pierce to act whatever he wants to. He can drop the gloves. He can skate away. But what you can't do is you can't force your head into another player's head. That's a headbutt, or it's basically using force with your head. I know that Davies had a chat with one of the officials about it, who says it was, you know, it's nothing big, no big thing, you know, it's just no big deal. But it's an actual headbutt, and you want consistency. And you look at, I think it was last season, a couple of seasons ago, David Rutherford got a suspension for something not dissimilar to that. You know, going at somebody with your head is a headbutt. And how it can be called, I know he was called for slashing a 30 seconds later and put in the box, and then Pelich actually goes on to score, I believe, on that power play. But
that's right.
But I think in that instance, the referees have to act accordingly. That's a game suspension, at least, for a headbutt. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, for me, it was Chris Wales, I'm pretty sure, that stepped in when Pelich replaced Lewis Hook. So he's standing right there. You've got the linesman that turns around when he drops the puck and look straight at it.
Yep.
So you've got two guys who are paying attention, at least two guys that are paying attention. Like, our bench reacts to it. Pellets reacts to it. And nothing. I honestly couldn't believe that there was no call on that play.
I think that you also see from Pelic's reactions the fact that Pelic is there to try to instigate something, or you know, to pull Pierce into something like this that gets him in trouble, because Pierce is obviously asking for something with the way that he's acting. And he does something. He headbutts Matt Pelic. He uses his head and presses it in, and the headbutts Matt Pelic. That's a penalty. It's Davey would have to correct us, but it's at least a game, you know, and nothing is called, which is frustrating. I talked earlier about Chris Wells missing the goal. You brought up him missing the goal. I couldn't believe that he missed that. I was looking at it time and time again. It was right in front of him, but okay, these things happen. That is something that was not only highlighted to the referees that they saw it, it was something that the whole arena saw. So where's the level of consistency? I don't want to get into the Manchester game too soon, because there was an incident in that made me scratch my head with regards to the referees also, which actually went in Jan's favour. But there is a level of consistency in that sort of officiating that you really need.
Well, look, again, apart from that incident and the goal that was missed, I actually thought the officials did all right.
Overall?
You know, I thought they were decent. At the weekend itself, but as I say, it's incidents like that, and I understand why we didn't cite the incident, because Dundee were playing Glasgow the next night. Glasgow are up at the top of the league. We're not going to do a favour for a team that's above us in the league. I think that's the right decision as well. However, it's an incident that this player now has got away with. We talk about repeat offenders, interestingly enough, it was Pash that thought that Elgin Pierce played really well. He thought that he challenged him to be better. He thought he was better against Sheffield, and he thought he was better against somebody else that they played last. I thought it might be Manchester actually, and then he thought he was better. He thought he was probably best player against us. But it's a matter of it's player safety. If Matt Pelic, if we had been, for argument's sake, at that time, was it 3-2?
Yes,
I think the score was 3-2 to us. So I think it's 3-2 to us at that stage. If we had been 5 or 6 or 7-2 up at that stage, and Elgin Pierce headbutts Pelly's going to knock his bag in.
Yep.
And then Pelly gets the instigator. Pelly gets a 2+10. Pelly gets 5 for fighting. And we've lost our captain for 17 minutes for something that the official hasn't seen.
Well, there we come back to that discussion in regards to the 17 minutes of penalties.
Yeah, sorry.
Jump in there. Like I said this last week about when we were talking about, fighting in general. And I think it was Chris Wells, wasn't it, when Pelly skates over into those hooks. Like, I don't know exactly, what Chris Wells says there, but I'm sure there's an intimation from the officials that Pelic is trying to intimidate, which is absolutely fine for me. That's part of his job. As a bigger guy, you have to let the guys that are trying to bully our smaller guys, to let them know there's a bigger dog in every playground. And, he's just having a word in his ear. You can't use your helmet. It's as clear and as black and white as you like in the rules. And it's in the new Elite League handbook.
Yeah.
It's Davey, what is exactly the rule for it?
Do you want me to read it?
Do you know what, David? Read it for us.
Second then, Simon, because I just didn't have that prepared because I wasn't thinking you were going to ask me, but it'll not take me too long to find it. Right, the rule. Rule 142, headbutting. The IIHF rule. Definition, a player who uses his head with or without the helmet on to strike an opponent. One, a player who succeeds in headbutting an opponent will be assessed a match penalty. New EIHL rule, a player who attempts to headbutt will be assessed a double minor, and a player who succeeds in headbutting will be assessed a match penalty. So, was it enough to be assessed a match penalty? He used his head and he hit him.
Yep. It wasn't an attempt, it was a successful headbutt.
it was a successful, you know, used his head in the opponent's face. You know, it's, you could use common sense and whatever, but if you're going to implement that, a little slash on the gloves as a slash, well, then a little helmet to the face as a head. But, you know, you can't be a little bit pregnant, as someone once said. You know, you've got to be, you know, the rules are the rules. If you're going to call a hook, call a headbutt. And that's just the consistency that we're looking from officials, and I guess the players are looking from as well. I think Simon's absolutely right. If the scores had been slightly different at the time, and you've seen what happened then later on in the game, you get on like a, you know, play silly games, win silly prizes, and Jean Dupuis deals with it expertly later on in the game.
What do you think of that fight?
It was coming. Pierce, for whatever reason, was running about acting the big lad, and, you know, he cross-checks Dupuis two or three times on the forearm, which I'm gonna say is not a massively padded area of the arm. Simon might be able to tell you better there, but
it's really not. I mean, there's a bit of padding. You mean you're depending on what a pad, what elbow pads you're wearing?
Yeah, you get a little tiny bit on your forearm. I know my own elbow pads cover more sort of tricep and rather than the forearm.
Well, but it's more the bias. There's usually a bit of a stick width of a stick. Funny enough. Between the elbow pad and the shoulder pad. Depends on what your equipment is. But, like, again, even that incident there, Davey, I don't know if it's caught in the play. I was watching those guys coming out of our zone, even though the puck was inside our blue line, and the boy, they're coming out of Dundee defensive end itself. And Pierce takes a two-hand slash at him on the gloves. No call on that. And then Jean Dupuis just went, do you know what? Screw this. Threw his gloves up in the air and fed Pierce his dinner. Didn't stop feeding his dinner. You know, he was giving him dessert and all while he was on the ground. And as I said at the time, he's hitting him so many rights, he's begging for a left.
But it's funny, Simon. Like, Pierce went after Swindlehurst.
And then
subsequently went after Hook as well. So, you know, if you're going to bully, you have to be able to take it back. And, you know, he found a willing partner in Jean Dupuis. He certainly didn't want any part of Matt Pellets. That's for absolute certainty. So that might run and run over the course of the season. You know, those boys will line up against each other again. And, you know, yourself, going back to, you know, the Ice Bowl in 1987 or whatever, you've got a long memory. There's probably a few boys that you remember their numbers from back in those days, you know, and boys remember what goes on the ice. And it's Matt Pellage's job. It's Jean Dupuis' job. Jason Bowen talked to me about his role, how he seen his role within the Giants, and it was to stick up for smaller, skilled players. You know, he knew his size, he knew his role, he was happy to do it, and, you know, but, the role of that is changing in hockey so much. Only I've got to get Victoria Silverwood on, hopefully, next week's podcast to talk about, you know, the CTE and concussions and all. It is being driven out of the game. This fighting and all, it is.
And I've got a problem with that. You know, I like to see the fighting. I like to see the intensity. I like to see a man's game. And yes, I don't want anybody getting hurt. You know, it's not nice getting a punch in the helmet. Excuse the pun. But, you know, he's getting a punch in the head. I meant to say punch in the head.
What age are we?
You started off it as well.
Unbelievable, this guy.
No, right, let's start. You keep that in. But anyway, what a man is, it's getting, you know, no helmet on, you're getting a punch in the head. It hurts. It genuinely hurts. But I understand you're not allowed to take your helmet off you get 2 + 10 or something then, or 10-minute misconduct.
Yeah, a bit of legal equipment.
You know, I just think that it's coming out of the game. I understand that, but I really don't want it to come out of the game.
Here, I know you've, because you've played and all, you know, the game polices itself to an extent. I can't remember who it is last week. There's a game, I think it might be NHL. Somebody gets one punch knocked out, clean, sparked out.
AHL.
It's all over Facebook and stuff last week. Yeah. The two trainers jump over the boards, you know, and then you've got the hockey, old school hockey guys, I guess. Like people like yourself, like myself, who like to see that in the game, don't want to see anybody particularly get knocked out and carried off the ice unconscious or whatever, but they like to see the old school blue collar, hard hitting fights. If there's a fight, that's fine. But we're getting to a place in society where we know of the damage and the guys that have died over the last, you know, the Belaks, those kind of guys that have done that for 11, took a lot of punches to the head after their careers were over, you know, and after they've died, sadly, you know, their brains have been tested and have this CTE, and, you know, it's a job, right?
Yeah.
And my job, you're not supposed to get punched on, and thankfully you don't. I've seen it a few times on sites, but, you know, it's not part and parcel of the of being a quality surveyor. But is it okay, just because you play in a physical sport, can you have that physical sport hard hitting? The referees, they enforce the stick play and the bad hits, and fighting just not be part of it. Why is it acceptable? And I say this as someone who likes it. Why is it acceptable when there are four people on the ice to enforce the rules, and the two referees and the two linesmen, they're there to enforce non-foul play? Why is it okay for two guys to just try and drop each other, to try and punch each other unconscious? In 2019, knowing what we know about brain injuries and stuff, it's a fantastic, it's something that definitely, let's get Victoria Silverwood on, let's get a player on, let's get a Paxton Schulte, somebody who's done it, and Paxton wouldn't disagree with you that I think the amount of punches Paxton took in his career have affected him in later life. Would he change that? Would he change what he did in his career? Probably not, because he loved it. Jason Bowen loved being that guy, loved being the go-to guy that looked after his smaller teammates. It's just, I'm not sure where I stand on it. And would I want my son, I don't have a son, but if I did, would I want my son to go into that sport where he could quite literally be one punch away from his career being over?
You could also throw in somebody, what do you call that fella that used to captain us and moved to the Cardiff Devils? What's his name?
Can't
remember. But he's a guy who had that role in the AHL and then subsequently stepped away from that role, arguably, to become more of a goal scorer, more of a playmaker. So, you know, a change in career, if you look at it that way, might be worth talking to him as well. Certainly worth discussion, Davey. We should put that together for one of the forthcoming shows.
We've got a guy coming on later on here to answer TFAs.
Yeah,
and it's maybe something we can drop a small question in towards. I'll ask him later on. But, you know, it's, I don't, what's your tuppence worth there, Simon?
I mean, again, I just like saying a competitive game. You know, there's a lot of hits are getting penalties now that, in my opinion, shouldn't. A perfect example was Matt Pelich a couple of weeks ago against Glasgow. He got a penalty for apparently Borden. And, you know, it's no more Borden than half the ones I've seen this season that weren't called. I just think it's getting a softer game. I think it's, you know, that's not tiddlywinks, guys. This is a professional sport. I've already said I certainly do not want to see any player face down on the ice. It is not a nice feeling. I've been in that position before, and I don't want to see anybody being carried off the ice. Sticking up for your teammates, I was the first one in every single time, probably for my own worst part of my game as well, but I'm not going to see one of my teammates taking a stick to the head or whatever it may be at that stage, and that just wouldn't have happened. But as I say, they're not allowed to police the game themselves anymore. It's officials are stepping in between guys to stop fights. It happened on Saturday night. Swinney was. You know, I think Swinney was going to go with Elgin Pearce.
Yeah,
and
I
then
agree.
The two linesmen stepping in.
Led to the box.
You know, absolutely. And the big thing about that is, and this is looking at that from a perspective of Swinney. I genuinely think Swinney would have dropped the gloves if Elgin Pearce had dropped the gloves. I don't think that would be an issue. And then they're losing an import. We're losing a British defenseman. And with the greatest respect to Paul Swindlehurst, you know, that's a good trade-off. That's a smart play by Paul Swindlehurst. And, you know, I just think that it's getting soft. And I don't like the way the game's going, if I'm honest. I love seeing a big hit center. I mean, Rayner did one the other night. He actually did one against Kevin DeFour, right at our bench in the third period. And DeFour played the rest of the night, but he didn't go anywhere near Kevin Rayne. But it's just, I think it's an interesting point, Dave. You know, I think we should maybe get Dr. Vic on and get her views on it. I know she was on our podcast, what, 4,000 and counting, a few weeks ago. And I just think that they, you know, I'm not looking for a Sean McMorrow. I'm not looking for Jason Rushton type of guy, you know. But I want our guys to stand up for our team. I want them to, you know, if they have to drop the gloves and you know, and punch the face of somebody, I want that to happen. I don't want anybody getting hurt. But
second period reminded me of a movie of Slapshot.
There you go.
sorry for cutting off, Siskum.
No, that's happy enough finishing there. I mean, Slapshot, absolutely not. A brilliant movie, absolutely one of the best hockey movies ever. I don't want to go down that lane. I think it's miles and miles and miles away from that happening. But I do want to see this physical, fantastic sport continue the way it you know, the way it should. Officials, I've already said, I thought the officials did okay on Saturday. They missed a couple. You're always going to, if you don't see something happen, that's fair enough. And interestingly enough, there was a referee that we ripped the crap off out of last year. It was Blake Copeland. And I spoke to a couple of boys about the officials last week at training. And the three guys that played last season for us, Jordan Smotherman, Garside, and Taff was actually the third one. He wasn't playing, but he was on the bench. And they all said that his game, as in his officiating, has completely changed this year because he's coming over and he's explaining his decisions. If it's a call against the chance, he's explaining it to Adam Keefe, and then he's explaining it to the away coach as well. And that's all you can ask for. Mm. Communication is key at this game. It's absolutely key. But if guys want to fight, get out of the way. Move out of the way and get stuck in, and then take him to the penalty box.
I saw your tweet at the weekend about Nigel Owens in the rugby, and I think that's absolutely right. Communication is key, and you can 100%. See that in so many other times. I'm going to move it on, gents, because I know we've got a few bits and pieces to do before we speak with Adam Keefe. The highlights from the game against the Dundee Stars, that 7-2 victory, of course, you can get from Belfast Giants TV. And, of course, there's the game report and all the post-game interviews on kingdomofthegiants.com. And we move to Saturday's game against the Manchester Storm in the Drizzle Dome in Altrincham. It was a 6-5 shootout victory for the Belfast Giants, their first road victory of the season. But it wasn't a straight, well, of a 6-5 victory, it was an interesting one. The Giants' goals, a hat-trick for Hamilton. Farnham, Lake got the other two, and Hamilton was also credited with the shootout winner. For the Storm, the goals came from Hope, Ulmer, Fawcett, Critchlow and Earhart. Matt Ginn only played about half the game, 29 minutes played, 18 shots against, 5 goals against. In came Adam Long, 24-year-old goalie, backup goalie for the Manchester Storm. 35 minutes played, 13 shots against, no goals against. Shane Owen on the other side, 44 shots against and 5 goals against. Your referees were Dean Smith and the aforementioned Blake Copeland. Right, so the Belfast Giants went 5-1 up in this game. Out went Matt Ginn, who'd conceded the 5 goals. In came Adam Long, but the Belfast Giants didn't score after that, and the Storm scored 4 more to force overtime. In the overtime, the Belfast Giants had a 2-minute power play, but it still couldn't score, and it went to the shootout. They took the win. That's the summation in my head. I've got a lot more to say, but Davey, I'll start with you. I started you last time, Davey, so you know, got to keep it fair.
I was primed.
You may be primed. I'm going to keep it fair. Okay. Mr. Kitchen.
Go to TV,
no problem. You sure? Oh, well, all right, well, Davey's primed and ready. 30 minutes good, 30 minutes bad.
Not even. More like 25 good. Rest. You know, it's very difficult to be too down on, like, we got the away win, we got it right. We got the away win.
Yeah.
We got the 2 points. Regulation should have happened. You don't, you know, a team of the Belfast Giants quality depth shouldn't go 5-1 up on the road and scramble an extra point in a penalty shootout. Just shouldn't happen. Like, I don't think I'm being overly critical to say that just shouldn't happen. Okay, we should have went on and won that game. They've put their backup netminder in. We should have comfortably won that game. It kind of hinged on the Giants actually came out very well. And I think a little thing that Simon said earlier on there too, but giving the puck, turn the puck over a little bit easier, and we did that again on the Sunday game, you know, or the Saturday game, sorry. Saturday, wasn't it?
Saturday was indeed.
Saturday, yeah. It's Friday, Saturday this week, apologies. We turned the puck over a little bit easier. See, when we got 5-1 up, as soon as that happened, Ryan Finnerty calls a timeout, and we come straight back into it, and we take, I think Lewis Hook goes for slashing or something. We play 2 minutes in the penalty kill, so that first 2 minutes, we haven't really got a shot down the ice. We're just killing penalty. As soon as that's killed, a couple of seconds left on it, actually, Kevin Rain throws the puck over the glass by accident. We're killing again for... you know, we're going straight back on the penalty kill. Lewis Hook takes another in the end for boarding. I think he's lucky just to have got the 2 minutes.
Yep.
And suddenly we're facing a 5-on-3.
Yep.
So we've been sort of 4 or 5 minutes just constantly in the penalty kill. We've conceded. Then I think Jean Dupuis had one breakaway. And Guinness came out, and he's looked either exhausted or injured. But he's came out, and as soon as that whistle's been blown down, he's out for the rest of the game. I think we take another penalty, and we concede just before the end of the period to make a 5-3. And from 5-1 up, and absolutely comfortably in charge of the game.
Darcy took the penalty. Slashing.
Yeah, we were creative. We were transitioning well. We were getting a decent amount of rubber on Ginn. But I think for a post and a bar, it could have been 6 or 7. We seem to just shut it down a little bit. You know, I think you're probably much better. I've only seen it on the TV. You were there, but we didn't really get all that dirty in the third period. We didn't get a lot of rubber. We go into 3-on-3 overtime. We only put one shot on net. You know, and we're creative in that 3-on-3 overtime. We should be better. And okay, it goes to penalty shots, and we come away with a comfortable enough penalty shot win. But I go back right to the start of my. You know, speech there. 5-1 up, home or away, Belfast Giants need to shut it down and win that game, or go on, keep the foot in the throat and go on and win the game comfortably. And I don't think it's being disparaging to say, especially with an Adam Long in nets, with no disrespect to him, these young backup goaltenders will not make the same percentage amount of saves as a Matt Ginn. Okay, so you put the same amount of rubber on both goalies, you should score more against an Adam Long. So, you know, it's up to us to keep going, to have a fire in the belly to go on and finish these games out. 2 points is 2 points is 2 points, and they're as important now, but regulation wins. You look at the final standings of the table last year, we won the league on regulation wins.
Were we
2 points.
Sorry,
go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say the Sizz, were we complacent?
Yes, I think so. Davey's absolutely right. It was a game of two halves. You know, it's not football, but it was a game of two halves. And you know, we're getting 5-1 up there. You know, I'm expecting as the I was out working, and I didn't get to watch the game at that point. I've watched it since. I watched the first period back on Sunday night, and I watched the rest last night. But you know, we have to be better. Again, listen to the interview that you did with Adam after the game, and he's taken a lot of the blame, and I don't think it's Adam's fault.
No.
You know, it's guys that may be switching off. It's we need to be better. We need to put the foot on the throat, as big Nate Russell would say, and just keep going. And we didn't. You know, putting Adam Long, I think it was 15 shots he faced, and I'm pretty sure it was only one in OT.
Yeah.
You know, that's not good enough. It's really not. The bottom line is we went there to win a game, and we won a game. Davey's right again when he says about regulation wins. They are important. You need to pick up those points. You know, we've went from being last place 2 weeks ago to fourth now, and we've still got a couple of games in hands in the team above us. I think our league form is probably being people being overcritical about it. I don't think it's actually that bad, and we're certainly in a better position after 8 games than what we were last year. We've more points. We're maybe not scoring as many goals, but that I think that's going to come along at one point. But when you get the chance to put these teams away and they bring their backup goaltender in, teams, it doesn't mean, say we had brought Dicko in. If Dicko plays in that game in that position when we're 5-1 down, we're doing exactly the same as what Manchester did. They tighten up around him. They give him more support than an import goaltender. It's natural. You certainly don't want to hang the kid out to dry. And I think it was his first EIHL game. Where he's getting regular minutes in. And he did okay. He's got to give him a pat on the back. He came in, he did what he had to do, and unfortunately for him, he's lost out in the shootout. The bottom line is we went in to get 2 points, and we got 2 points. But I know Adam will be very disappointed the way and the manner in which he won. Watching his interview with Packer after the game and then listening to the one that you did with him, Paddy, again, he certainly takes a wee bit more blame than what I think he should. And I've said it the week before when I was on the podcast, our guys need to step up. I think we have stepped up. I think we played better in the last couple of weeks. But if we do that to a Cardiff Devil team or a Sheffield Steelers team or a Nottingham Panthers team, and you're 5-1 down and you let them get that back to 5-5, we're losing in regulation and not overtime. They will put us away.
Yep. I'm just sitting there thinking of about adding my own thoughts on the game, but it's just that I
don't get mad now, Pat.
Well, I think you said you were working. No doubt that you looked at your phone and saw a stream of just like 30 or 40 angry WhatsApp messages about during that game.
I remember Paddy. I remember Davey sending me a text going 5-1 up. I'm waiting for a pint.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he said.
To give you like my mindset as that went up, 5-1 up, I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be a great post-game interview because we had 7 goals the night before. We're 5-1 up here. I'm going to ask the coach, we found our scoring touch. And then they bring in Adam Long, and I think, happy days, this is going to get even better. After what had happened the last couple of games there, the loss at the end of last season, the loss at the start of this season, the difficulties that we'd had in that rink, finally we found a way to get past this storm and actually stamp a bit of authority on the game in that rink. And as it's the one that's just down the road from me right now, it's somewhere I'd like to have a smug grin. And I walked out of there with a win, but more disappointed with the win than I was with the loss earlier in the season when I thought we played excellently. And it was just down to the fact that, like you say, the 30-35 minutes, especially after Adam Long came in, we shut down. We stopped playing. And you say about Adam Long faced 15 shots or whatever he faced. I struggle to think of maybe 2 or 3 that actually challenged the kid. And fair play to him, you're absolutely right. He did do what he had to do, but we didn't give him much to do. And you say about having one shot in overtime, when we had a full 2-minute power play and we were giving up shots, we were passing to try to find that perfect shot instead of trying to use the fact that there were guys screening him to take a pot shot on a kid in the net. And it just became more and more and more frustrating as that game went on. And the momentum started to build for the Manchester Storm. And I started thinking to myself, they're coming back into this. They're going to equalise. And, Andy Key on one side, who was, he was looking at me. I'm saying, I don't know what to think of this game. And, it was my friend Alex the other side. That's not for me to say. But I was certainly giving him he was seeing the mouthfuls of abuse that was coming from me as that game just went on and on, because the Giants just stopped playing and started handing it to the Storm, who were more than pleased to take it on. And it just, the frustration grew and grew and grew. And then when 5-5, I just thought, well, how on earth has this happened? How have we coughed up 4 goals in the space of 30 minutes? From a dominant position to progress. And now, a win's a win's a win. We needed a road win, and in the end, we've gutsed out a road win, and that's great. But I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of – we'll talk to Adam Keefe in just a few seconds, but there's going to be a lot of learning points from this game. Guts an out-of-road win at last, absolutely. But for it to be 5-1 up and for it to end 5-5 in regulation, as you say, Davey, we need regulation wins.
I think you put up a bring point. You know, we need to learn from it. Yeah. I think that's important. Adam will take away the positives from the game. He'll look at the negatives as in the last 30 minutes. And, you know, he'll learn from it as well. There's no doubt about that. I've been lucky enough to be close to the team now for a number of years and through a few coaches. I've never seen anybody working as hard as Adam Keefe. Mm. As a coach. Never. You know, the guy, on a game day, he's in the arena 7:30, 8:00, parks in the same spot every single time because he's first in the bloody car park. and he's the last to leave. He's on a par with Taff at the minute. Taff and him would probably be in about the same time and then going home at the same time. I know Taff was there until after 1 a.m. on Saturday, Friday night, sorry, and then packing the gear early Saturday morning to get the flight on Saturday at lunchtime. So, you know, it's certainly not going to be for a lack of effort. It's not going to be for a lack of detail and going through to make sure everything is in place to be the best we possibly can. But he will learn from this, no doubt about that.
The highlights from this game are yet to go online from Storm TV, but we'll keep an eye out for that and tweet them up when they become available. Before we hear from Adam Keefe and ask him your fan agenda questions, we're going to point you in the direction of kingdomofthegiants.com. On Tuesday night, we tweeted up an interview that Simon did with Steve Thornton in the period break against the Dundee Stars. That's online. You get it on our SoundCloud account. SoundCloud.com/AVFTV and of course at kingdomofthegiants.com. Let's hear, before we speak to Adam Keefe, a little clip of that.
When you look at, you talk about pressure and you talk about the way you look at it from yourselves itself. Adam Keefe, you see what the workload he puts into it. I mean, he sent me a text last night with the lines at nearly midnight, and you know, he's in here at 8:00 again this morning. The time and the effort they put into it, it's not just, he doesn't just have to concentrate about what's on the ice.
No, and that's, the coaches in this league do a lot. Keeper is a special one. Like, we're obviously thrilled with what he's done for the organization, not just as coach, as a player as well. But, you know, we took him on as our coach. We knew that we were getting a true leader, you know, probably one of the best leaders I've ever seen. And when you have a guy that's working that hard, it's hard not to follow. And this is when, you know, the game's really easy up top here when we're watching it and we're seeing kind of guys make plays or not make plays. And this is probably where the biggest frustration I have, or why I get frustrated, because I see how hard Keeper's working.
I see you watching the games right there beside us. Like,
I was every year I was getting slightly better at being able to watch the games, but this year I've taken a dip for some reason. But when I see a lack of effort, you know, that's what kills me.
Yeah.
You know, like guys can make physical mistakes. And
mental mistakes as well.
Yeah. Mental mistakes, we try to limit as much as we can. That's a lot of the coaching and stuff. But the puck is going to bobble over guys' stick. You're going to get out-muscled at times. You're going to make a bad read on a play. But when it's a lack of effort, it absolutely kills me, especially when you have a coach like Keefer who's putting in all the effort. Those are the things that I want to see a little bit more of. And I'm not calling guys out for lack of effort. It happens in every league. But I think for us to win, you know, you need the same effort that we had against Liberec, against the teams that we're playing now.
Time for the fan agenda, brought to you by our friends at Belfast Giants TV. And this week, a man who's always very generous with his time to hear out of you from the bridge, be it on the fan agenda or just the general interview, it is, of course, the head coach, Adam Keefe. How are you, mate?
Not bad. How are you guys doing?
Good. A four-point weekend. Obviously, we spoke on Saturday about the complications that took place in the Manchester game, but reflecting on it a couple of days later, what are your thoughts?
Oh, obviously, I've watched the game back since then, and we certainly took the foot off the gas. And then we also coupled that with the penalty trouble, which gave them life. And it does feel like in that building, when you give Manchester life, and it's tough to regain your composure. It's not the first time we've been in that scenario. That being said, it's never a good thing to give up a 5-1 lead. in a league where a regulation win can cost you a league championship. It's something that I don't lose focus on, and we certainly wanted to make that known in our group. And you know, it's a long year, and we certainly are very happy to get the 2 points, but needed to take that lesson out of it that we can't be giving away regulation wins when we have the game kind of sealed up. We need to make sure that we see it through and get that win in regulation.
Coach, it's Davey. We obviously heard you talking in the interview with Paddy, and as you've done on many occasions, results maybe went the way we hoped. That, you know, you take a lot of blame, you take a lot of responsibility for this yourself, and that's great as a player. Your coach does that for you. Does there come a time when you have to actually? I'm not asking you to name names, not asking you to throw players on the bus, but as in the position you're in, does there come a time where you have to look at it and go, we know the players are responsible here for what's going on? You know, from a coaching perspective, you've talked about it. We should really turn a 5-1 lead into a regulation win. It's not really a coaching issue. That's a personnel issue. That's people not maybe application well enough through the rest of the game. Is there a time when you don't take that responsibility yourself?
I think we all need to be accountable to ourselves. The players need to be accountable to themselves and their teammates and the coaching staff. And the coaching staff needs to be accountable to the players. I'm no different. You know, certainly there's things that I would like our guys to have done better in that game, and there's things that I would have liked myself to have done better in that game. And composure was one that we seem to have lacked there in a trying time in a tough building where, like I said, it can get away from you real quick once you give them life. I think they really rallied around their goaltender change and tightened up defensively, and we didn't get a whole lot of looks from then on. And you know, it may have taken something to regain our composure, and I think that's that frustrated me the most with myself, was not being able to regain that composure that you need to have in those sorts of games where, you know, you gave up 2 power play goals, let them back in the game. Okay, now let's settle down and get back to playing the way we know we can and play smart. We were unable to do that, so I was a bit frustrated with myself for that. Obviously, I'm frustrated with the players as well for the same, I guess, same reasons. But, you know, once we get out of that game and we take a step back, we need to check it and learn from, I guess, that meltdown, I would refer to it as, in the last half of the game, and move on. I mean, at the end of the day, we did get 4 points on the weekend and our first road win. So it is tough to be upset with that, albeit we certainly went about it the hardest way possible.
Adam, 20 games into the season, you've 6 CHL, 6. Challenge Cup and 8 in the league now. How happy are you where you're sitting right now?
Obviously, I'm not happy with the way we've got to where we are in terms of some of the stretches we've had. But if you take a step back again from that and look at the fact that we are through in the Challenge Cup and we're waiting our opponent for the quarterfinals, in terms of win percentage, we're right up there with the Cardiff Devils for top of the league. And you know, we still need to do the business when it comes to these games in hand. I mean, they're not no game in this league is easy to win. So you'd much rather have the points on the board than have games in hand, I think, at this stage. So we certainly need to do the job when it comes to our games in hand, and just continue to try and maintain some consistency. I think if we can get that, I think if anybody in this league can get that right now at the moment, you'll start to put some distance between yourself and some teams, because the way that the league is going right now, it seems that everybody's beating anybody on any given night. So it's kind of a race to find that consistency level right now in this league.
Coach, I suppose one of the major positive takeaways out of that weekend that's just gone, 10 different scorers, you know, we've been over the last couple of weeks maybe struggling to find the net just as consistently, but for everyone, a lot of the guys to get themselves in the score sheet must have been a big positive for you.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it was nice for to put up. I think we put up 12 goals on the weekend or 11. But just to have put up that many goals and get the guys start to feel confident in their scoring abilities and trying to loosen up the grip on their sticks. And once you get that confidence going, that swagger back, we're a dangerous team. I think one thing we could take away from that weekend is we can tighten up defensively now. We do that if we're going to score 4 and 5 goals a game, and we tighten up defensively, I like our odds.
As we normally do, we open these open this section up to the fans for a few questions. Chris Revel on Twitter, third season in now, coach. What have you found to be the most challenging aspect of being a coach?
I think it still continues for me to be time management and what I spend most of my time on. Sometimes I'll find myself cutting a lot of video and not using a lot of it. So I might use my time wisely. Could I be doing other things to help the team? Those types of things, you find yourself trying to do a lot and maybe not focusing on one particular thing that we need to sharpen up on. So for me, it's those things. I mean, there's a lot of little things within coaching that I need to improve on. And I think that I can't really put my finger on one thing. There's a lot of things I need to improve on. And I'm just like the players. We're trying to get better every day. And for me, from a year to year, there's always something new every week that I learn or figure out that I need to improve on. So for me, it's just a work in progress. I'm doing the best I can with where I'm at and just wanting to learn as I go. So I think the single-handedly most challenging thing, just to get back to answering the question, I suppose, has been the turnover in players from year to year since I've got here. It's tough going into a year and having to basically start from scratch and revisit the way we want to play. And, it does take time. And I think that we've seen that last year with the way we started the season, and we've seen that this year as well. So it's not my imagination. But, so those things comes down to me being able to break down the way that we want to play and communicate clearly to the players so that we're all on the same page. And once we get that, we'll be fine.
We got another one in from Ross Hamilton saying, do you think the Champions League affected the start to our league or Challenge Cup?
It's a tough one to say, to be honest with you. I mean, I certainly wouldn't take it away from our start. I think we earned that right to be in that tournament. It was certainly a big draw for the players coming in to play in that as well. It certainly takes a bit of the focus away from the league and the Challenge Cup, the Champions League. That's just a fact. But it's just like I was asked this question last year with the Continental Cup, and it's another trophy. It's another competition that we want to win. And my mindset and that. I think our team's mindset is every game is a must-win game for us, and it doesn't matter what competition it's in. We have a competitive group that wants to win every game, so we just need to approach it that way. Now that, with all that being said, now that the Challenge Cup group stage and the Champions League is over, it is nice to completely focus on the league title chase.
Coach, it's Davey again. I'm going to ask you a bit of a lead into this question. We're going to have a bit of a special show coming up about fighting stroke physicality within the game, and we had the incident last weekend where Matt Pellic takes a forward slot to have a word in Pierce's ear, and Jean Dupuis later in the game ends up having a little tilt with Pierce over the head of it. And how perhaps fighting is or isn't going out of the game, and how players are maybe worried about fighting because officiating tends to give a 2+5+10 with almost every fight now. And, how acceptable it is with what we know in 2019 about the literally hundreds of cases of CTE of people that have passed away and players playing with these injuries now. how acceptable is fighting in the game in 2019 with what we know? And that, I guess, is a difficult question as someone who effectively earned their living being in that sort of policeman role.
Yeah, I mean, I think I like where the game is at now. I mean, it's still very much a part of the game. Yeah, obviously a lot less of it. And I think that there's a lot of reasons behind that. You named a lot of them, but I think one of the main ones within this league is the league has gotten so much better that, well, one, there's less players that do it in the league. Two, it's so competitive that, you know, sometimes we can't afford to lose a guy for 5, 7, 17 minutes. And or you can't afford to potentially sway the momentum. So there's a lot of things. And I think those things were starting to creep into the game when I stopped playing. And I certainly went through those battles every day in my mind or every weekend in my mind with when is the right time to fight. It was obviously for a purpose, but sometimes, I mean, oh, I'd be lying if there wasn't. Sometimes I was thinking, I need to get a fight at home here. I mean, it's been a little bit dull here. So it's obviously finding the right moments, and you want it to be a part of the game and happen naturally and not be forced a distraction from the game. But it's a tough one. I mean, you expect these players I'm not sending players out to fight. That's not my that's not me, and then that's not the way that I coach or anything like that. Nobody had to tell me when was the right time to fight or anything like that. So, you know, I let the players play and police the game themselves. I think that, I mean, it certainly has dwindled, and you touched on the, I guess, the research behind CTE and just repetitive brain trauma, and I think the players are just more aware of this, so they're a little bit more, I guess, scared of what could come in the future, and so I think that plays a part in a lot of, I guess, the less fights in hockey, and also just like I said, the competitiveness and the skill of the players now has picked up so much from league to league that it's tough. It's tough to have a guy that can only fight on your roster, that's for sure. You just don't see it anymore. So these players need to be able to play. And, you know, once they're able to play, you need them on the ice as well. So it's a tough one. I mean, I think fighting will never leave hockey. I think it'll always be there. But it's going to be part of the game, and it's going to happen naturally.
Adam, just want to touch on, I know you don't like singling out guys, but I want you to single out one because you know him for so long. Mark Garstyte, 10 seasons as a Giant, testimonial year. You spent a lot of time on the ice with him, obviously a lot of time off the ice and away games and what have you. But how much of an impact has he had this year, being a two-time rookie champion? And obviously, you know, even though he probably doesn't look it sometimes, he's into his 30s now. He's a very experienced member of your squad. And for me, it looks like he's taken Patrick Vronka under his wing, even though I find it hard to say or, you know, to hear what Mark Garside talks about sometimes. Patrick Vronka. Patrick Vronka's English is improving, but he's having to listen to Gary with a Scottish accent. But how important has he been for you this season?
Well, first off, I think if Mark Garside's teaching Patrick Vronka to speak English, we're in trouble. I think Garside's reliable. I mean, he's been reliable since I got here in my playing days, and he was, I think, you know, Daryl Lloyd and myself, we counted on him to be that reliable centerman that took care of the play defensively while we ran wild like madmen. We always knew that Mark had us covered, and you know, he was a great centerman for us. And I think that the way that he skates and the way that he escapes pressure made for an easy transition into a defenseman, and for him to be able to play, you know, center and defense on any given. I mean, you should see him in practice. He's doing it both all practice. So you know, it only adds to his toolbox that he's available for both positions. And certainly, like I said, he was reliable when I played on his line, and he's reliable now that I'm coaching him. And you know, one thing that people maybe don't know about him is he keeps the room real loose, and he's another guy that's been around here for a long time that can kind of show players around and you know, just share that experience with the guys that are new to the league or new to the city. And I think that that's very important when you got guys, you know, 13, 14 new players coming in here, don't know the league, don't know the city. It's very important that we have not just myself and Jeff Mason and Rob Stewart and Smotherman telling these guys, you got guys in the locker room that are able to share their experience with league title chases, how much each game means, and you know, how to prepare for certain road trips, all these little things that a guy like Mark Garside comes in real handy for. Like I said, his ability to be a utility guy that can play forward in defense is you can't replace that.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate your time. Going to wrap things up with just a couple more questions from the fans on Twitter. John Smith, last season, Omar Pasha played a couple of shifts when they were down a few players. Would you ever consider listing them back up again?
Oh, I did that my first year behind the bench. Mm-hmm.
Can I jump in here? I've seen him doing line rushes. Let him stay behind the bench.
Is that on my ability or on my condition?
Oh, no, there's no problem with your ability. There's never been a question with your ability, but your crossovers could be improved this year. Like
I just said there previously on the fighting question, the game is evolved so much as well, ability-wise. I'm not sure I'm there anyway. So to answer your question, no, I'm too far gone now. I did it my first year behind the bench. I thought that it was tough then, and I certainly couldn't imagine having to get into a game now. I mean, certainly in my head, I'd want to do it if we were down so many bodies, that's just the type of player that I would want to be out there helping the guys and trying to make sure that we weren't taking on any more injuries. At the same time, I'm no dummy. I understand I'm too far gone. My conditioning is not there, and I'd likely end up costing the team. So to answer your question, nope, behind the bench is where I'll be staying this year.
Stevie Thompson, as a player or a head coach, what's been your favorite ever Giants game?
Well, there's been a few, to be honest here. Obviously, the most of the championship games have been my favorite ones. I mean, I remember way back to my very first year, the Sheffield home game. I think it was the day before St. Patrick's Day.
Yep. It's always one that like yourself or Daryl Lloyd all pick up on. It was a really special game then.
Yeah, it was. I think it was one. I think it was probably because Sheffield was the team that was chasing us, and we had a doubleheader against them. So to play in that game and realize if we had won that game, I think we'd even just had to tie that game. But to get off, you could just tell that we all knew what was at stake, and we weren't going to be denied that game. And the atmosphere was awesome, and just It was a game that I won't forget. So I know those teammates from that year were up there with some of my most favorite teammates. So to go through that my first year, my first experience in Belfast, obviously is a big reason why I'm still here. And then I think there's many games that I'm probably missing and all that. I mean, the second time we won the Elite League, There probably wasn't many games that I remember, to be honest with you, because we actually kind of won it too easily. So there wasn't really one I can really put my finger on. I mean, there was a couple Nottingham weekends where we had real success there, and I think we ended up winning it at a local restaurant there. So
local Nottingham restaurant.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are all good memories. And then obviously as a coach, the Challenge Cup games were awesome. And I think that doubleheader weekend versus Cardiff last season was pretty special, because we knew that had kind of put us right back into the title chase. And we knew that it was still going to be a tough sled in the last month of the season. But obviously now looking back, a big part of the reasons why we can call ourselves reigning Elite League champions.
And the final question from Twitter is, who was better at Super Bowl between you and Kevin Surrett? And that question comes from Kevin Surrett.
Oh, that
what is Super Bowl to begin with?
Kyle Surrett. It's two-touch, warm-up game before games. Guys play two-touch. You have to call it sewer ball because basically the last guy touched the ball, so a lot of guys kick the ball and sewer the player next to them. I was certainly much better than Kyle Surrett.
There you have it. Coach, listen, tomorrow night is the game against the Fife Flash before a double against Coventry Blaze. How are you guys set up?
I think we had a good practice on Monday and we had another good one today. So, yeah, we're just looking forward to getting over Scotland and back on the road. It's not going to be easy. It's a tough building to win in, and it's a tough travel day. So we need to get there, be professionals, and get the job done and come home.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Coach, we appreciate your time tonight. Now, good luck through the week.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Adam Keefe. Right, let's have a look around the league. And we'll start off, actually. Do you know what? Don't play this one often enough.
Dops. Yeah, yeah. Dops. 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 Yeah, yeah.
Thanks very much to Seth Bennett. Yes, the Department of Player Safety have ruled on Cardiff Devils' Sam Jardine. He's been given two games for elbowing in a game against the Guildford Flames, a Challenge Cup game against the Guildford Flames over the weekend. I'll start with you. Says two games seems a little bit lenient, if I have to be asked.
Very, very lenient. That is absolutely intentional. He knew exactly what he was doing. You know, Davey put a tweet out there on about retaliation, and it's bang out of order. I thought it was very, very light to come out in the two. It's Cardiff Devils. So it's, you know, sort of a bit of favoritism maybe, but it's. I thought it was deserved a lot more.
Davey,
oh, is the player okay? Is the guy hit okay?
I don't know actually.
That could have ended a player's career. You talk about fighting, and I know we're going to, you know, don't want to go back on what we talked about earlier on, but that could have ended a player's career.
Davey?
I love Twitter at times like this when Cardiff Devils, there's a guy called Dominic Bate, who describes himself as a family-first, opinionated and passionate Welshman. And he supports the Cardiff Devils. And he put a tweet out earlier saying, "I'm not complaining at the ban for Jardine. It is deserved. However, I'm just wondering if the process for DOPS reviewing incidents has changed. Do opposing Giants fans just need to make a fuss on social media to get something reviewed?" So he's crediting the Belfast Giants fans for getting Jardine suspended. Let's be honest, there was a lot of, and I mean a lot of, Cardiff Devils. I hate the new sort of logarithms or however Cardiff works. Somebody you know likes something else, it puts it in your timeline because I'm no interest in what these people have to say. But there was a lot of we were getting our sticks held, we were getting slashed, we were getting hooked, referees weren't calling anything.
Retaliation?
And the, so what happened allegedly in this, which I've seen and didn't see this, the slashes, just like the referees didn't see them, Jardine was skating up the ice and getting slashed repeatedly in the back of the legs, at which point he elbows him in the face. And I put the tweet out, and much like the Spiro Galagos incident, retaliation is not justification. If a referee misses a slash, you can't take things into your own hands. He's done very well not to get the gate on the night. I don't understand how he didn't get game match penalty for that. It's been retrospectively looked at quite rightly by Dobbs. I do believe the procedure now from Dobbs is they can look at whatever they want. If evidence or if stuff comes to their attention, you know, they can relook at it again. And I assume that the Guildford Flames are still within their right to ask for protection for their players with the by asking for a review of an incident. Simon, teams still allowed to ask for a review?
I'm not sure, Divi. I have to admit, I'm not 100% sure.
We had a case there the other week. Who got reviewed on us the other week? They're suspended.
Forsberg.
So that came from some kind of, you know, did Cardiff Devils fans grass us up, Dominic? Don't know, but for me, you know, I think he's pretty lucky that he, as I put it, it's a 4-day ban. He doesn't play tomorrow night. He doesn't play. It's either Friday or Saturday they play again. You know, he misses those two games.
Who did they play in the two games? Just out of interest,
I think they play Coventry in the Challenge Cup and then Fife in the league, and then they play Dundee in the league the following night. So maybe for the second of the Scottish doubleheader. But lenient, I believe, if you look at what the incident we're talking about earlier on there, I can't think of who the player, I mean, Chris Frank or somebody, got suspended for headbutt.
David Rutherford,
very similar kind of, you know, love nuzzle, whatever you'd call it. It's not a Glasgow kiss headbutt, but you've used your head as a weapon. Suspension worthy, suspension. You suck it up, you move on. So I think Pierce is lucky enough he didn't get sanctioned on the night and didn't get any follow-up supplementary discipline. And I think that Jardine's lucky that he's only missing 4 days of action.
In news from the Nottingham Panthers, they're obviously still having a bad time of it, which is, you know, really sad. But to try to stem that, they've signed Julian Talbot. If you remember the name Talbot, you probably know Joey Talbot, once played for the Sheffield Steelers, scored a lot of goals, a lot with Jeff Legree. Julian is his brother, arguably, in my opinion, the better of the two brothers. Julian played quite a few years for Eisbären Berlin. He dropped down to DEL2 the last couple of years and now has been picked up by the Nottingham Panthers. Personally, I think Talbot was a great goal scorer for Eisbären Berlin. I've seen him play some absolutely phenomenal games. Saw him score a hat-trick against Iserlohn. Was a great player. Probably still is a great player. Is this the player the Nottingham Panthers need? I don't know. I find it, I said this on Twitter and I stick by it, I find it a little bit disappointing to see such a good player go into what seems to be a stagnant team at the minute. We'll see if he's able to change things up there. Challenge Cup group stages are still going on, Davy. Can you believe that?
Do you mean it's starting to get fatigued, but I'm absolutely delighted to see that sits atop of the goaltending stats and well deserved.
Sorry, you say that again, Davy. You cut out there.
I say it's. I'm getting fatigued with the Challenge Cup. I'm playing it for almost 2 months now, and still some live action. Coventry Blaze have got themselves back. Cardiff Devils aren't over the line yet there either. But it's great to see Andrew Dixon sitting atop of the goaltending stats, and of course the Cardiff Devils fans complain that much now the Elite League are going to change the statistics to make him not top, but that somehow they'll make Ben Barnes number one goalie, but hey, whatever.
I find it strange that the group of four teams has completed all their games, but yet the two groups of three teams are still playing weeks later. Only in the Elite League that could happen. That the teams
they have to play two games more, Paddy.
Yeah, but still.
I know, no, I'm not arguing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you either. Shut up, you. I just think the whole thing needs reviewed.
Yep.
I mean, I, if somebody came up with a better idea in which way to run it, so all teams, I mean, so you know what, I think maybe this year, you know, it looks like it's going to be 10 teams again next year in the league. Battle for who deserves to be in the league, who deserves to get those extra games. You know, if it is the top 8 teams in the league that they go through the playoffs and they go through the Challenge Cup next season, then so be it. But, you know, this whole thing, to end it up and going into November for games and the group stages of the Challenge Cup is a bloody joke.
I think whenever teams within the league have played three, four, or five, you know, league games more than a team, those Challenge Cup games could have been played instead. So, you know, it's just a bit of the fixture. I'm sure the fixture list, fixture meeting isn't easy, but there needs to be a bit of a, you know, you look at the playoffs, mate, it's a one weekend to qualify, and it's one weekend that's over. You know, literally 2 weekends for the trophy that a lot of players want to win. You know, with that North American mentality, winning the last game of the season, it's massive. You can literally turn it on for 2 weekends, as Coventry did a number of years ago.
Yeah.
Had a stinker of a season, turned it on for 2 weekends, won the playoffs.
No, you're right.
And that goes down forever. And, you know, you're just into November now, you're 8-10 games just to qualify for the quarterfinals. You know, yep. So give the Challenge Cup some prestige for winning it. You know, you win it, you get qualification for the Continental Cup or something rather than the playoffs. But, you know, it's a much, much harder trophy to win than the playoffs.
Take the bottom 4 teams from the previous season, draw them like a cup style into a bit of a qualifier to eliminate 2 of those teams. That leaves you with 8 teams. Take those 8 teams and turn it there. They're your quarterfinalists. Make a clean draw and just make a draw and just turn it into a cup competition. Done. Have it all wound up before Christmas.
Do you know what? This is why VFTB is you know, the Cardiff Devils fans go on and say about the chance. The Devils fans going about and then say about the chance fans complaining and things happen. You know what? You are welcome.
Hated, adored, but never ignored. That's what.
Yeah, hated, adored, never ignored. Elite League roster rule changes took place were announced just after last week's show went online. The headlines: the maximum bench strength will change from 19+3 to 17+3. The existing ruling regarding under 23 players changes to players under 20 or 25 and under. The number of imports inverted commas is set at 13. The minimum bench strength, I would put my teeth in, required to start a game increases from 12 skaters and 2 netminders to 14 and 2 netminders. And starting from the 2021 season, teams will be limited to a total number of 18 imports in one season. An additional 19th import signing will be allowed if the change is related to a netminder. These, Mr. Kitchen, are quite significant changes.
Yeah, I don't understand why they announced it in the middle of October.
No, me neither.
You know, get it done at the start of the year so you know everybody stands for the following season. You know, I just think it's getting harder and harder to pick up really good British players. I think that's why they extended the age to 25. And, you know, it's getting, you know, there's a dearth of English and Scottish and Welsh players, well, Northern Irish as well. To play for GB and it's getting tougher and tougher to find them and it's sort of even getting the next season. You look at the Brits that we have on the team now. I know that Adam and Thorch will be looking to try and get them agreed for next season already. I know for the guys who are moving forward, and it's just that, you know, I can see the import level being raised, and not maybe obviously not for next year, but for the following season. You know, the level of competitiveness, the level of the standard of the players has been improving year on year, but it's getting more difficult for British players to break into the teams and to get regular ice time and I don't see it improving for the British players anytime soon, to be honest.
Davey, the the limit of 18 import players in one season, it seemed to have gone by the wayside because it wasn't deemed by the Elite League in their press release to be a headline, but that's quite significant as well.
I guess it gives guys maybe just a little more job security than, you know, some things like how many, you know, off the top of your head, imports did the Sheffield Steelers use last season, for example, you know?
45.
It's a very good point. I was sitting thinking, I didn't know it was last season. 23.
Who used 23?
I think it was Sheffield used. You keep talking and I'll have a look here.
Yeah. So, you know, I know they had twins or something at the start of the season, didn't it? Got rid of, and just there seemed to be a constant turnover of players there. And then obviously when a new coach comes in, that can shake things up as well. So I think it's to try and stop teams. I don't know what the reason for it is. It's obviously to stop teams having a high turnover of players. But like in a business, you know, you're trying to get the best people to do a job, and you're in the entertainment business, and you're trying to put the best team out that you can for the crowd that you're bringing in. So I'm not sure just what the reason behind that would be. We'll maybe talk to Steve Thornton about that more, because he'd been involved in the process of making that decision. But, you know, in terms of it's almost stopping the free trade, you know, the free movement of players or whatever. It's all getting a little bit Brexit here.
Yeah, well, Mr. Kitchen asks Mr. Thornton about this in the aforementioned interview you can get on kingdomofthegiants.com. So get yourself over there for Steve Thornton's views on it. Did you find out how many there is?
25.
From?
Last season.
For who?
For Sheffield Steelers.
There you go. They'd be done
for. You know, so they'd have had 7 imports there, effectively, this season. 18, did you say, was the limit, Paddy?
18 is the limit in one season. You can have a 19th if you want to bring a netminder in.
So you can basically, 13's the limit, the lower limit, and then you're allowed to effectively make 5 changes if you want, whereas the Steelers brought 14 imports in and made, you know, what, 11 changes last year. So it's massive for a club like Sheffield who don't mind gassing a player over, you know, wearing the wrong socks to train or something.
Last point on the Around the League before we move on is that there's 17 UK officials have been selected by IIHF for IIHF tournament duty, the likes of Andy Dalton all back on the long list for the World Championships and part of the Olympic qualifiers as well. It's a good reflection on the guys that get a lot of grief, not just from us, from others, that shows that they are officiating, Davey, at a high level.
It says something about the people that are picking them anyway, doesn't it? I think that we are, and I did put a tweet out the other day. I think that we have to congratulate all these people. They're doing a tough job, part of the furniture, no game without them, all the cliches and all, but, you know, they've got to the top of their game. Andy Dalton there is going to the World Championships again, assume as a linesman, because that's what he did last year, and that's what he did in the CHL, rather than putting the armbands on. But, you know, it's good to see progression. It was good to see at the whatever way the list was written, it was the ladies were all left at the end, but there was 3 or 4 girls were also selected for officiating duties, and some of the younger guys coming through to get under-18s, under-20 World Championships and Olympic qualifiers and stuff. So congratulations to them. It shows that maybe, you know, the hullabaloo on Twitter about them being absolutely useless isn't necessarily the feeling across Europe.
I think there's one other thing, Paddy, we missed out there. I don't know if you want to add it in, like, but it's a, you know, it's a personal accomplishment for Jonathan Phillips. 1,000 games in the Elite League. You know, he's a real nice dad, and I know he plays for the Sheffield Steelers. Like, congratulations to him. I mean, 1,000 games at that level is certainly something to be commended for, and I think I think he's been a great player the whole time way through as well, both for Cardiff Devils and Sheffield Steelers. But congratulations to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Jonathan Phillips is a guy that I had the pleasure of chatting with at one of the charity games at the Drizzle Dome a couple of years back. Really nice fella. And like I say, it's a great achievement of a player like that to at this level as a Briton playing for Team GB and all the accomplishments there and with the Sheffield Steelers. So, yes, congratulations to him. Right, let's have a quick preview of the games that are to take place in the next few days. First up, we have a game against the Fife Flyers on Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. This is the first live game on Free Sports. And, well, we sent our own Mr. McGimsey to chat with the main man, Aaron Murphy.
Joined tonight by the voice of British hockey, I guess, but the voice of Free Sports, the voice of Premier Sports, it's Mr. Aaron Murphy. Murph, welcome along.
Thanks for having me on, Davey. Delighted to be getting going now with our first of 17 live EIHL games after the Champions Hockey League wound down. But looking forward to getting going.
Well, let's talk about domestic action before we have a look at the CHL. You know, as you say, new season kicking off. Excited to go and, you know, starting with the defending champions against Kirkcaldy's finest.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's a great barn to do a hockey game in. Every time we go to Fife Ice Arena, I mean, it just feels like it reminds me of places where in Newfoundland where I grew up, that sort of old feel to the barn. And the crowd is right on top of you. And Paul Adie will tell you when he went in there as coach of the Giants, boy, that crowd can be on the visiting bench. So Adam Keefe will know they'll have their hands full. In saying that, it's great to start off with the defending champions. That's what you do. So, I mean, I know it hasn't been the greatest of starts for the Giants, where they seem to have gotten things going in the last few games. And certainly there's been some good battles in Kirkcaldy over the years, and I expect much the same as they get it going again on Wednesday.
What are you expecting from this season? You know, and I know that's a very open-ended question because we've had some amazing seasons the last 4 or 5 years as the parity in the league has got closer. But what do you expect? Is there anything you've seen so far this season? Any teams jumping out at you? Any surprises?
Well, you just said it there, parity. I think it's going to be even tighter. I mean, it's been tight, you know, and every team, every offseason, teams are getting better. They're recruiting better. They're going down different avenues, the Canadian university route. You guys have really found some good players because of the Friendship Four NCAA route. So everyone's, you know, casting the net wider and being more creative. But, I mean, you look at it this year, I mean, the Manchester Storm, when people say, an old, smaller team and all that, they've had some big, big wins. And then you look at, I mean, Fife would have thought that they'd probably advance at least to the next stage of the Challenge Cup, and they're out. So there's been all sorts of kind of crazy, meandering storylines so far. But one thing that I'm certainly looking forward to now that we're starting to concentrate on domestic action after the Giants and Devils are done in the CHL is certainly seeing how, you know, the rivalry last year down the stretch and how you guys won the title and how Cardiff, you know, everyone thought Cardiff were going to get it done in Coventry, again, proving that anyone could win on any given day. So I think there's going to be another sort of last few games or last weekend of the season title winning celebration. So I think it's going to be tight. But I'm interested to see how the teams that contended last year, Cardiff, the Belfast, see how they get going now. It's always tough after you do that European journey against really tough SHL opposition, obviously. So be interesting to see how the Devils and the Giants get going now.
Let's look at that, the CHL journey that the Giants, and I suppose we can ignore the Cardiff Devils to a certain extent, it's the Giants-focused podcast, but, you know, that CHL, first time in it for the Belfast Giants, bit of a different experience from the Continental Cup of the year before and previous years. What do you think the Giants will have taken out of that, and how much fun was that doing it for Premier and Free Sports?
Well, it's an honor to do those games when an elite team, our EIHL team, is up against the likes of Luleå. And, you know, it is a different step up from the Continental Cup. It's no disrespect to the Continental Cup. I guess it's the you know, the Europa League to the Champions League. It really is quite a gulf in speed and talent and depth. And, you know, there's Luleå. You rock into Luleå and they're in ninth in the SHL and you're going, oh, well, they're, you know, they're down towards the bottom of the table. And you just see how good even ninth in the SHL is. And Luleå's picked their season up a little bit and they'll be a playoff team, no doubt, in the SHL. But I think what Adam Keefe will learn is the speed is just another notch, another level. The ability to score goals in bunches, and certainly the ability, special teams is so high in the SHL level, whether it's the PK or the power play. So there's always, look, if you're a good coach, which Adam Keefe is, you always learn when you play better opposition. And I think he would have taken a lot away about special teams, about, you know, the breakout and the speed, how to defend the faster team on the breakout, which could stand them in good stead down the stretch against, you know, a speedy Steelers team or whoever. So, I mean, look, let's be honest, it's tough to get out of the group stage. Only one team's ever done that from the elite side, the Nottingham Panthers, and it took a lot to fall together in that. They played magnificently well. They rode a hot goaltender, got some timely goal scoring. But, I mean, look, even you look at the Devils, and they came down to the final day. You guys had a big win on home ice. You lost in overtime on home ice. And, I mean, I thought you competed really hard. But when you come down to the last two games of the CHL group stage against Luleå trying to win the group, it's always going to be tough. But there were many lessons learned, and I think the players would have enjoyed it. I think they're probably happy being back at the speed of the Elite League, though.
Couple of questions to you on that. You know, that very first game we had against Liberets in Belfast, there was a little bit of an allegation, Liberets maybe took us a wee bit lightly, flew in on the day, you know, just thought it was going to be easy enough, and came, like, the noise in the barn that night with, like, around 3,000, it was almost comparable to the Arland game. It's certainly one of the best games of hockey we have seen, because the Giants came out and fought with fire. And to be fair to Liberets, it was fire with fire. And, you know, their coach coming out with the slap shot quotes and stuff, you know. But it was a great game to be involved in. But on the backside of that, obviously then we've got Luleå and going to Liberets, as was fortunate enough to go. The gulf is vast between us and the CHL teams that we were up against there. Is there an argument that, especially with one way to look at it, the AIHL now are reducing roster sizes, reducing the number of imports in the league. Is that gulf going to be harder to bridge?
Well, first, the first part of your question, I mean, yeah, they might have flown in on the day and looked past you, but any team that looks past an AIHL team in the CHL now, well, they should have egg on their face, because the last few years have proven, you know, the Lakers, the eventual Lakers have lost, FC Bern have lost, Liberets have lost, Mountfield have lost. So these teams shouldn't be looking past the EIHL opposition. So you want to fly in on the day and take it lightly, then you should get, you know, beaten down in every regard. And I think that night the Giants beat Liberets down pretty good in all facets. I believe Kevin Rayne was in good form that evening. But, I mean, look, yeah, the Gulf is big now. So you talk about that recent news about, you know, bench size and roster size and all that. Look, the Elite League is not going to govern the way they do things based on the Champions Hockey League. It's down to the individual teams that qualify and want to take part in the Champions Hockey League to maybe, again, I talked earlier about being creative with your recruitment. You remember the year the Nottingham Panthers went in and they recruited guys and said, well, it's a short-term contract just for the Champions Hockey League. Well, no one's done that since, because when you tell a guy, well, you're just here for the Champions Hockey League and we'll see how it goes, well, he's not going to go block a shot with his face a la Adam Keefe back in his playing days, because what happens is if you get injured in that short-term contract, well, you're not going to get picked up somewhere else and you're not going to stick around in Nottingham. So people learn from Nottingham's first go-around in the CHL that it's no point just recruiting guys to be a part of the CHL and then letting them go once you get back to the Elite League level. So now everyone's recruited better in the CHL from an EIHL point of view. So I think teams are going to have to learn and keep evolving within the competition. But you talk to the players and you talk have taken part, they all want to keep going. And I know the Giants fans that I talked to when we were up there at SSE Arena, they loved it and they want to be a part of it. And I mean, it comes down to being smart and getting people into university programs and finding guys that want to play in that shop window. But yeah, the golf is vast. And because I do the SHL week in and week out, I know how vast it is. So I'm under no illusions of how a team like that is going to beat Frölunda or Luleå easily. But it can happen, and it has happened. So I think it's a worthwhile endeavor, and it's something that the Elite League teams that are top of the table should be aspiring to.
And your own thoughts on the EIHL rule changes, sort of on bench sizes and import levels?
Look, I mean, you look at the way that things have gone, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you increase the import levels, people get upset. If you reduce the import levels, people get upset. For me, I mean, look, I want to see more British players coming through, but also let's not forget, you know, some of the best players we've seen over the last few years are those imports, are the likes of Liam Hicks coming in. So there's a mystique and a marquee about some of those guys that have played in the NHL or played in the SHL, and it's a fine line, isn't it? Maybe this is the line where they get it right. I mean, I know people weren't happy with 14, so we'll see what happens. My perspective personally is you look at Team GB the last few years, and they've succeeded at world championship level, whether it's getting promoted and now sticking in that top division for another year. And they've had some good dual nationals, but most of the best players on the team, you know, the Dowds and the O'Connors are, you know, homegrown, so to speak. So, I mean, you've got to find the balance there, and I guess the Elite League is trying to do that.
Let's have a word for your buddy in the booth, Mr. Paul Eddy, you know, guy
Chris
we know.
Ellis. Yeah, Chris Ellis is doing well, buddy.
No stranger to the guys in Belfast here, you know, he came in, has success, and then I guess we all thought he would go on back into the game in some way, but he's found a little niche in the market there, and what a guy he must be to work with.
I can't get rid of him, Davey. I thought for sure he'd be coaching somewhere by now. No, I mean, he's a pleasure to work with, and Paul has, I mean, I don't think I'm speaking out of school, he has that offers, there's nothing that suited him. He's got a young family, I've got a young family, you've got kids. Sometimes you have to make decisions on what's best for others around you and your family, and not just your own aspirations. In this role, I think, working with Free Sports and Premier Sports, it suits him because you might only be away for a day. And no one's going to fire you after a bad game instantly and have you holding the bag, you know. So I think he's a great coach. He's a great asset to the broadcast team. He analyzes well. Over the last few years, we've challenged each other to be better. And he's become really good at that, you know, analysis, that color commentary role, we call it in North America. And with Chris Ellis ringside, I think it's a good group. We all know each other well. We all know what's expected. I mean, I can be a hard taskmaster at times and say, you know, make sure you know this and make sure you know that. And because I'm like dealing with the producer about sort of production value side of things, everyone does their bit. And Paul certainly over the last few years has become invaluable in that analyst role. And yeah, I love working with him. I'm glad he hasn't taken a job coaching selfishly because he'd be hard to replace.
And then let's just quickly look at the Free Sports Premier Sports project as it's now into, you know, it's a number of years old now since you've managed to, you know, kick that Elite League door in and get our product on the TV and free most of the time. Is that a project that's working out well?
Well, I think so. I think people are enjoying it. I mean, the ratings were good last year. We were free to air. That's what the league said they wanted. We had a free to air vehicle there. We went HD on Sky. Like everything that has been asked from that sort of side of what could be good, what could make it work. Well, certainly people well above me here have ticked those boxes, right? Free to air, HD on Sky, Freeview. It's available online on the Premier Player. So, I mean, look, it certainly is working in that. When I moved over here 12 years ago, you'd get the odd NHL game on NASN. There might have been a highlight show or whatever on Sky from the Elite League. You might have saw one game every couple of months. But now we're into a situation where you can watch the SHL, the CHL, the EIHL, you can watch the KHL, the NHL, I mean, and all free. So that sort of side of things has come a long way in 12 years, and I'm not saying it's because of me, but I've been lucky enough to be along for the ride. And, I mean, when I first moved over, I used to get excited to see any hockey on TV. Now you can watch it all week long, and I know this Saturday, for example, Free Sports has Edmonton at Pittsburgh at 6 p.m. this Saturday, so you can watch a little bit before you go off to your EIHL games. But that's Crosby versus McDavid for free. I mean, that's the two best players in the world. So we're living in good times as far as viewership or being a viewer of hockey. So on the EIHL side, I think it's working well. I mean, you'd have to ask the league what they think. I'm not privy to the boardrooms. I think it's going well from their perspective, and looking forward to getting going tomorrow, and hopefully there are other games tomorrow, which isn't ideal, but certainly hope that there's a good ratings tomorrow and everyone enjoys it.
I'm going to throw one last question at you, Murph, before I let you go. I know you're a busy man. 20 years the Belfast Giants are this season. Just in another few weeks, we'll be celebrating our 20th anniversary at the Odyssey Arena. You must have a little highlight, something that you were involved in over the last lot of years that sticks out in the memory.
Oh, man. Well, I know it's not directly club-related, but certainly club-organized. The Friendship Four, being a part of every Friendship Four is an honor. Being there for that first CHL game is an honor. But to be quite honest with you, it's something to do with me not working. My little boy turned four last February, and my dad used to take me to hockey games all the time. It's a special part of our relationship, and obviously my dad's back in Canada, so I miss him. But the biggest thing that stands out for me is the coolest or the funnest moment was last February, taking him to see Belfast versus Glasgow for his birthday as a bit of a surprise. And long drive from Dublin to Belfast, he kept saying, "Where are we going? Where are we going?" And got there, and Mark Brooks and the team took care of me. He was in a box next to Big Sizz doing the Giants Live. He had a jersey and a foam finger, and he sat during that game. And he still talks about it. And funny enough, had him up a few weeks ago against Manchester on the Saturday night for his second game. So the most important thing for me of those 20 years and then my 12 years over here is seeing the joy in a little four-year-old's eyes seeing live hockey for the first time. He told Shane Johnson in that game last February that the Giants were going to win the Stanley Cup. So Shane said, "You're welcome here anytime." He's got big vision for the Belfast Giants going on to the Stanley Cup. So, I mean, a bit of a meandering answer, but that's my greatest memory.
Mate, as a dad of little kids, you've got me right in the feels there. I'm going to have to leave it at that. Then thank you very much for your time. I wish you all the best tomorrow night and, of course, the Belfast Giants over in Kirkcaldy.
Davey, thanks for having me on anytime, brother, and I hope to cross paths with you in the flesh soon.
Thanks to Murph. Yep, free sports for that game Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. in Kirkcaldy for the game against the Fife Flyers. And then on Saturday and on Sunday, the Belfast Giants have a home and home series against the Coventry Blaze, Saturday at 7 p.m. in the SSE Arena. And then over to the Sky Dome in Coventry on Sunday at 5:30 p.m., both in Elite League action. Before we chat about the games, let's hear from Danny Stewart, the head coach of the Coventry Blaze, as he chatted earlier on with Joel.
With his Coventry Blaze side leaving for Cardiff to take on the Devils in a crucial Challenge Cup game tomorrow night, we're grateful now to welcome head coach Danny Stewart back to View from the Bridge. Coach, thank you very much, first of all, for taking the time out. How are you today?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Not too bad, thanks for having me.
Always good to have you. Now listen, straight into it, you're coming off the back of an impressive 4-point weekend with wins over Sheffield on the road Saturday and Nottingham at home on Sunday, and your 7-4 league form to date has you right in the mix. You know, you're sitting second place there behind the Glasgow Clan. Not only that, but as we just discussed, a win over Cardiff and Wales tomorrow will see you through to the knockout stages of the Challenge Cup. I think you would call that a pretty decent start to the season.
Yeah, no, we're happy. Obviously, I mean, I think every team could say there was a couple of results we felt we would have liked to see go our way. I think we performed well enough to do that. But, you know, all in all, yeah, I know, very happy with our start. Obviously, we wanted to put ourselves in a good position in the league and obviously in the cup as well to progress. So, you know, obviously in the cup, I spoke about those results. You know, there was one game in Guildford there where they'd come back from a long trip, and you know, I think for the most part, it was a game that we felt we should have won, but unfortunately we didn't. And it might make things tough on us going forward, but you know, we got to go into Cardiff tomorrow and get a win, and when we do that, we progress.
And taking a look at your squad this year, in the off-season you signed a core of 8 returnees, including the likes of Luke Ferrara and the evergreen ageless Ross Venus. And you also brought in 12 new faces, and that included a mixture of EIHL experience, like current leading scorer Evan Bloodoff. And you brought a couple of first-year pros out of college in, John Curran and Dylan Eichat. Did you get a sense early on that there was a little bit of secret sauce about this team? Are they living up to the idea that you had in your head whenever you went to market in the off-season?
I think they are now. You know, again, there's always, you know, I think every coach will say the same thing. There's always, you know, recruiting in this league, there's certainly an element of luck as well. But, you know, as much as you do your due diligence, you know, you hope things turn out the way you expected. And I think right at the very start, you know, it took some time, the first couple weeks there. You know, we were giving up a few goals and maybe not playing exactly the way we wanted to play. But listen, I mean, with that big of a turnaround, that's expected. And I think we've continually gotten better. And so I think I can say at this point that, you know, I'm happy with the signings. I'd say for the most part, they've all turned out to be as I expected, if not better. And, you know, through that is probably a reason why we've put ourselves in a good spot in the league. And, but listen, nobody's getting ahead of themselves here. It's only October. We've had a good start, but you know, our focus is just one game at a time and continuing to play the way we are so we can pick up results.
And just if I can pick on that just a little bit, you know, I mentioned a couple of your guys that you've brought straight out of the NCAA. That seems to be a sort of growing theme in our league versus maybe the older years where you would have brought in guys coming down the other end of their career, say from the AHL, the NHL. What's your opinion on those younger guys coming into the league? Are they changing it?
Yeah, I think it goes. I think it's due to both ends of the spectrum. I mean, we couldn't recruit out of the NCAA until 2010, I believe it was. You weren't allowed to take a guy right out of the NCAA, but 2010 that changed. You know, a few teams started looking at the NCAA and CIS back then. And I mean, I remember my very first job taking, you know, I think two guys out of CIS, and you know, I think. Teams are looking at that a lot more, but I think the availability is there a lot more because our league has a way better reputation, and some of these NCAA guys certainly are more open to coming to the UK in their first year pro, whereas I think 5-6 years ago maybe they weren't as much. So I think from teams' perspective, they're definitely looking down that route a lot more, but also those NCAA guys are looking at the UK as a better option for themselves as well.
And what's your impression of the Elite League as a whole so far this year? There's a lot of talk about the unpredictability of the league. Do you get a sense that that competitive gap of 5 or 6 or more years ago, do you get a sense that's continuing to narrow?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 100%. I mean, you can't. I wouldn't want to be a betting man. So it's a long league. I tell you what, it's, you know, anyone can beat anyone on any given night. There's a lot of things, elements that go into it, and, you know, with travel and, you know, back-to-back nights. And but, you know, even then it's tough to predict. We've seen a lot of shock. A lot of upsets on the road and a lot of, you know, just games you wouldn't foresee happening. So and that's a testament to all the teams, all the organizations. I think we've got 10 clubs that are doing things the right way, and you know, I think the coaches across the league are doing a very good job, are very well prepared, and maybe some familiarity as well. You know, a lot of coaches that have been around and, you know, starting to recognize how certain coaches play their games. So I mean, that certainly helps as well in preparation for games. But no, it's a testament to the league. I mean, it's so close now, and you know, you're always going to have your top teams and your so-called bottom teams. But like I said, that gap is shortened, you know, from even, yeah, I even think 3-4 years ago. And yeah, it's great to see. It makes it such a more competitive league.
And just finally, before we wrap this up, Adam Keefe will give me the death stare if I ask him about anything beyond the next game. So I know you have more pressing issues on your mind today, but if you'll help me out for just 1 second, this week's Home and Away series is the first meeting between the Coventry Blaze and the Belfast Giants. What's your impression of the Giants so far? Are you expecting a battle this weekend on the road and then back at home?
Yeah, I mean, playing against the Giants, you're always going to expect a battle. You know, Kiefer's, you know, they're a well coached team, and you know they're going to play with a little bit of grit, you know, under Keefe. So they've got good balanced lineup. Obviously, good goaltending. They've got some solid D-men back there with some size and some grit, and you know, forwards as well. They got a good balance of skill and grit as well. So you know, they're a team that plays heavy, and you know, I think you know, we'll definitely have to expect a battle all weekend, and we'll have to up our game from a physical standpoint. And but like I said, when we're playing and we're playing the way we want to play, I think we can compete and beat anyone. So you know, obviously we'll get through Cardiff and then we'll turn our attention to them.
Thanks to Danny. Okay, so Fife and two games against Coventry. Says on the back of a 4-point weekend and what happened in Manchester, we heard from the coach earlier on and the learning that the Giants have to do there, but there's an opportunity here in the away game to Fife to put right what went wrong the last time we were there.
Yeah, you know, he's already said when we were talking to him earlier that it's a tough place to go into. It's live on Free Sports, as we know. It's going to be a tough ask. You know, again, we've got a travel day to get there. I'm assuming it's probably going to be 11:30 ferry on Stena Line. So the boys will not get to Fife until about probably 5:30, 6:00. So it's straight in. They'll need to get ready to go. They've done the trip a few times now, so there's no time to settle on your laurels. To a certain extent, they need to get ready to go, and that's from the first drop of the puck. So I'm expecting another good performance tomorrow night. It's one of the places where, you know, Fife are usually pretty decent in the league, but they're not finding it easy this season either. And
They've obviously missed out in the Challenge Cup for the last place there. So, you know, they'll be hurting from that, and obviously the Giants going through. So it's going to be tough, but I expect us to get the win tomorrow night.
Coventry Davy have been doing pretty well of late. They're riding high. They've got wins last weekend over Nottingham and Sheffield. They've got wins over the Cardiff Devils. They've obviously put a decent side together.
Yeah, they've got a little bit of everything. They're fast, which is key in this league. You know, we've talked about speed kills, as the old Steve Thornton saying, and you know, they have that in abundance. Seem to be a little bit more solid in the Sky Dome than they have been in several years. Special teams, especially just looking at their special team numbers over the last 2-3 weekends, have been really, really exceptional. Good on the kill, very good with the extra man. So no mugs. And as you said, they've came up with some big results against teams that you would, in the last number of years, that they've maybe dropped, you know, games against. A good win against the Panthers at home, good win against the Cardiff Devils a couple of weeks ago as well. So, you know, I think they play Cardiff tomorrow night as well.
Yep.
And before they have us home and home on Saturday and Sunday. So it'll be a difficult weekend for sure.
Absolutely. So those games, Fife Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. live on Free Sports from Kirkcaldy, and then on Saturday, 7 p.m. Elite League action at the SSE Arena. Get your tickets online or on 0844-847-2455. Get yourself down to the SSE Arena, and if you can't, Mr. Kitchen will take you through the game on Giants TV. And on Sunday, 5:30 p.m. over at the Sky Dome, the Belfast Giants take on the Coventry Blaze once again. You'll be able to join Ed Kimberley and Stuart Coles on that, on the Blaze webcast, 5:30 p.m. Any other business, boys?
I have a couple of things. Actually, no, don't. I've only got one. OSC are holding a speed quiz next Monday night in the Black Box at Hill Street in Belfast. All the players are going to be there. We're still got a few spots left. I want to try and fill that place up with a player on each team. So it's £10 per person. You can join the OSC desk if you go to it on Saturday night. You can book your place or send an email to osc@belfastgiants.com to reserve your space. As I say, there's a few spots left, not a hell of a lot, but it should be a good crack. You know, it's the first chance to see all the players off the ice this season. I know there's a few of them go up into the Makulas after different games and stuff like that, but it's the first gathering that they've had off the ice for the OSC this season. So, we're going to announce another event very, very soon, probably on that night itself, and give those people the opportunity who are there to make the booking for the next event that's going to be there. So come along. As I say, they're always good crack. And, yeah, hope to see you there.
Mr. McGimsey?
Oh, any other business I have is a wee shout-out to wee Blakey to get well soon. Not feeling so well today, so... get well soon, buddy.
Absolutely. Here.
And of course, we see, obviously, on his travels, Ethan McLean is over in Pittsburgh today. Fingers crossed for him. He's big Sidney Crosby fan. You never know what will work out there, whether he'll get to meet Sid the Kid or not. But if he does, it'll be something that is on his list of things that he has always wanted to do. So fingers crossed for him. And whether he does or not, hope he has a lovely holiday.
Here. Right, on that note, that's a good note to close the show. Big thanks to Adam Keefe, Danny Stewart, Anne Murphy, and of course to Dylan, who opened the show for us. You can get in touch with us at AVFTB on Twitter. KingdomOfTheGiants.com is the website. Podcast at KingdomOfTheGiants.com if you want to send us an email. SoundCloud.com, Facebook, all the usual sort of things. The games this week, Fife Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. live on Free Sports, and then Saturday, 7 p.m. at the SSE Arena against the Coventry Blaze. Get yourself down there or join Sizz on Belfast Giants TV. And of course, the away game at 5:30 p.m. on Sunday, again against the Coventry Blaze over at the Sky Dome. And if you can't get over to that, you can follow it on the Blaze webcast with Ed and Stu. Mr. Kitchen and Mr. McGimsey, thank you for your time.
Thanks, gents.
Cheers, lads.
And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey, and we'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge.